Verulam Sports.
Oh, indeed. And welcome to Verulam Sports Podcasting, an extra special Verulam Sports Podcast. We've been running, of late, a series of special podcasts where we focus in on health, well-being, and kind of the 360, how those two crucial elements of us, human being, interact and interrelate. And to take that to another level now, England may be still dreaming of their run Euro-wise carrying on, but we're focusing in on running itself just now. And to help me with that, we have a friend of the show, Stuart Clark, from Be Military Fit Hearts and London, and a man you may recall that I spoke with relatively recently, a man who still holds numerous records on the Striders running board, a man who's represented Great Britain age level right across the earth. It is Martin Whitworth, Stuart Clark. To Stuart first, welcome back to Verulam Sports. How you been keeping?
Thanks, Tony. Yeah, not too bad. It's since I last spoke to you, obviously the world's opened up a little. We're back into full swing of things, and that's had its own challenges physically and mentally for me. And, you know, I'm a big believer in sharing that stuff. I think we should talk a bit more. But other than that, it's nice to be getting back to normality. And I am really, for the first time in a long time, you know, a subject after your own heart, I am really enjoying the football, all of it on TV. And it's great to see an England team that look as though they want to be out there playing and actually, you know, not to get too in depth because it is a running podcast, but a team of lads that look like they all want the ball from the minute the whistle's played. So really enjoying that. I'm also a massive rugby fan, so Lions. So I am filling my boots with sport at the moment.
You and I both just living the dream, loving life. It's fantastic. Just real quickly before we get into the running focus, Stuart, one of the things that I've really valued about what you provide, the culture that you instill at Be Military Fit, is that it is very much that kind of family togetherness, pulling together as one is the key. Now, again, nobody would ever know what's really going on behind closed doors. But in my living memory of football, there's always been wags. There's always been seemingly superstars taking up an awful lot of the attention. The thing that I have to give credit to Southgate for, although I'm on record as saying I'm not yet sold on him, or indeed the team, has been it seems like he's got that kind of togetherness, that culture, that ethos, if you will, running through the team. Do you get that impression yourself?
Yeah, I do actually. And I get that impression of, you know, a team of, there's some world-class players in that England team, but I think it's the first time in a real long time that we've seen English football, a team of young individuals that want to play for each other. And I can understand why people aren't sold on Southgate, because I think tactically he's still, bearing in mind that I'm an international football follower, not necessarily a club follower anymore, but I think he's tactically yet to be proven. If we if we can get through the semis and make it to the final, you know, I think people might start changing that opinion on him, you know, gently. But the long and the short of it is I think he allows his young, you know, these young superstars paid huge amounts of money to actually express themselves. You know, Bellingham, 17 years old, running into the stand to specifically give his shirt to a Birmingham fan that he recognised. You know, things like that. I just don't think they're things that would have happened perhaps in, you know, without offending anyone, in the Lampard, Gerrard, you know, era. I just don't think they would have been, I might be wrong, but they never really seemed too fussed about the connection with the fans. And I also believe that that does come down from management and coaching. And we've spoke about it before, Tony. There's a massive difference between instructing and coaching.
Yeah.
And I imagine at Southgate's level, he seems like the kind of coach that's trying to foster an attitude of coaching where you put your arm around someone and actually coach. And there's, you know, I'm sure Martin will agree, there's a big difference if you're about to start your big race. There's a big difference between that coach standing 20 yards away with his arms folded, you know, head knowledge, the knowledge of, well, I've already told you everything you need to know, go out and do it, compared to that guy or girl that's standing there with their arm, you know, speaking sort of literally, but their arm around you, kind of like, you can definitely do this. This is what we're going to focus on. You know, we've done all the preparation. Physically coaching. And I think that's what Southgate's brought to the England team, that coachable, manageable element. A lot of young lads that need support and guidance.
But it's always a two-way relationship, isn't it? And they must obviously be receptive to taking on that freedom and that allowance of support. Martin, real quickly, and again, we will focus now on running, but I want to get your take here on everything that we've just brought up, because I respect massively that you've represented GB at age level right across the world, at European level, at elite level, that you're a man who's run and rubbed shoulders with supreme athletic stars, the likes of Haile Gebrselassie, and amongst a heap of others. So I guess you therefore know the kind of different nuances required for each individual and how they respond to a particular coach. From your experiences in that regard, what have you noticed about this England side and particularly Southgate as he's performed to date?
I'm like you. I'm not 100% sold yet on Southgate and the team, but I am certainly getting there closer than I've ever done with any other team in relative recent history, and both team and coach. I think Stuart's right. I think that there seems to be, or there appears to be, a bond between the team and the coach where they actually, they're kind of doing it, they're doing it for the fans, they're doing it for the coach, mm-hmm. rather than just doing it for themselves and their own glory. And, you know, your observation that Wags and all this other sort of noise that used to always surround the team has been really absent. And I think it's quite refreshing for that, because I think what that's actually done is it has, and I was just watching the news now where they were showing the most incredibly diverse sections of society expressing opinions on this championship. And these were not people that would be watching it. There were cafes full of women in hijabs, all waving St. George's flags behind the team. And, I don't want to get into it, politicize it in any way, but, the taking the knee and using this voice and using this exposure that they've got to, have a platform for some of these issues, I think is great, because that's not being then drowned out by Gazza's exploits in the pool, or whatever. It's kind of like it's become very boy band. It's all become very clean cut. But I think that's what it needed. It needed that because it's attracting a lot of other supporters to it. My prediction: I actually would like to. I think Italy will win tonight. I'm behind Spain though a bit more, but I don't think they'll do it. And then we'll go all the way, to be honest. But you're forgetting the other thing. You talked about the Lions, and that's been very exciting. Yes. But you're forgetting the biggest thing of all happening, the Olympics, in a few weeks.
The granddaddy of all sports, Martin. And no doubt about it, we'll build up to that good and proper over the next few weeks. I'm already enthused. I was nervous that it wasn't going to happen. Like the Lions, I'm excited that it is. Martin, though, coming back, coming back, though, to the focus of today's podcast, which is, of course, running. Martin, I think you made a wonderful point there about the panning of interest in the football. And not to get too political, because it's a fun, banter-filled show. That's what we're all about. But one thing that, Stuart, I know you're very passionate about, is that certain of us create barriers to entry to all forms of physical engagement. And some of those make sense. We get it. But, running is one of those that cuts through, because it doesn't require much equipment and it doesn't require much cost. You can almost do it from yourself with whatever means you have. Could you please, Stuart, just elaborate on that and just give me a steer of how powerful running can be as one of those fall in love with physical activity modes of operating?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've spoken at length about this previously. Well, maybe shortly, actually, but we'll speak more at length today. My golden rule with exercise of all types before we hit running is that exercise should be accessible and inclusive, not exclusive. And then, yes, if you delve into the world of sport, perhaps it does become a bit more exclusive, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about running, and I will walk back, I say, pun intended, but we will walk backwards from running in a minute. The great thing about running is that there's such a low barrier to entry with running. You don't need a gym membership. you don't need a swanky brand new pair of Nike or Adidas mm-hmm. trainers. Mm-hmm. You need some footwear, as it works in this country. You probably need some appropriate clothing, but let's face it, most people in the UK have what we would deem appropriate mm-hmm. clothing mm-hmm. to walk, jog or run. And you also need something that actually is the hardest part, and you can't buy it in a shop. And that's a little bit of will and determination to actually want to achieve something. Whether that achievement is walking 5 minutes to the shop
yep.
or jogging 5 minutes to the shop rather than getting the car or whatever that might be. You do need to have that. And we've touched on it in a previous podcast about not being afraid to reach out to other people to help you with your journey and attaching yourself to the right people to achieve yep. your goal or, you know, and going on that journey. But I think if you look at running as an initial impact, mm. running can be quite a scary word for people mm-hmm. because so in particular here, I'm probably going to be a bit direct here, but I work with a lot of men and women over the age of 50 that have had yep. an incredibly poor experience at school level mm-hmm. with physical education. You know, you're talking bra and knickers, yep. pants and vests, yep. you know, forgotten my PE kit. And a lot of what I do isn't necessarily based on the quality of the training. It's actually trying to undo the psychological barrier in place of exercise. The great thing about walking and running, you know, walking to running, mm-hmm. for example, and everything in between, is it's something that most people have done before. Mm-hmm. So you can instantly prove that somebody has the ability to start at a level and progress. They don't need to pick up weight. They don't need to have a big bank balance to mm-hmm. go to the most in-depth, swanky boutique gym. All they need to do is strap on a pair of trainers, open the front door and walk out. And we could delve into the, you know, the complexity of how hard that is for some people to get out of the front door. But ultimately, the great thing about running is it is almost zero barrier to entry compared to other levels of fitness, even sport and football. You know, you don't need a football to go running. You don't need.
And the beauty is, isn't it? Once you've made that first step, so to speak, it is phenomenal then how momentum builds. And if you have that focused goal, you surround yourself with that correct community pulling with you together as one, that then how much you develop. And I know that, Stuart, because I have to say a massive thank you to you personally, because from our very first pod on this health and wellbeing series, where indeed the focus was on walking, you challenged me, and I was well up for it, just to do 15 minutes to a place, 15 minutes back, so a 30-minute walk, reasonably intense, but don't kill yourself. And you say, commit to that, Tony, commit to that for at least a month. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. Now, I can't recall precisely how far ago it was. It's been a while now. Mm-hmm. Now, that has become so much in part of my life, Stuart. I do it probably at least 5, sometimes 6 times a week. Still not mega far, you know, still about half an hour, maybe 45 minutes some days. But I've got to tell you, I've lost in excess of a stone. And it isn't even about the weight loss, actually. It's about how I feel in myself. I find, because I'm one of those guys, I'm sure this resonates with you both, I'm sure it resonates with many listening, who juggles quite a few balls. You know, a full-time job, I do these podcasts, I have my bigger vision and this and that, and sometimes it's like a bit overwhelming. And I found, as I've gone through this process of working, which I'm massively committed to, that some of those eureka moments have actually come, not when I'm there with a pen and a pad trying to desperately get it out of me, but just when I'm away from it all during these weekly walks, these daily walks. So a big thank you, Stuart, because it resonates with me. But now I'm intrigued, having now made this as such a firm commitment. What's the next step in terms of converting that running, walking into something of a run? What would you advise me to do next?
Well, I mean, look, first of all, you should celebrate that, because not just the weight loss, but the hardest thing for people, I've seen it time and time again, and Martin will probably agree in terms of the sporting aspect or the community aspect of running, but consistency is the hardest thing in modern day life. You know, doing something once is actually the easy part. Mm. Doing it twice, 3 times and so on is actually, that is the real challenge. Mm. And if I think for a lot of people, the process at the outset of that journey, you know, we have a saying on our podcast. So we similar to you, Tony, during COVID, I launched a free podcast, no marketing, no advertising, mm-hmm. no link to the BMF brand. And we actually launched 2 podcasts. We launched what we call the Crossrun podcast, which is effectively an athletic. So I used to coach at AAA level, athletics, mm-hmm. running specifically. I'm a biomechanist by trade. Mm-hmm. That is what I do. And I used to work in, very lucky, Premiership football, Premiership rugby, all the way down to swimming and also English netball. Mm-hmm. And you know, effectively on helping people mechanically improve their performance through mm-hmm. through movement. And not just elite athletes, but also normal people that have been injured, etc. And the whole idea of that was to give people an outreach that didn't know what they were doing to go from, well, I'm active, I'm walking. How do I go to the next level with support? Mm. Now, you can't physically be on somebody's shoulder as a coach during COVID because that was no longer available. Mm. So it wasn't this grand idea. It just kind of happened, really. We launched a podcast, upskilled myself fairly quickly, and still don't really know what I'm doing, to be perfectly honest.
But Joe Rogan doesn't know what he's doing. I'm telling you, it's half the fun of the game.
But we got to this point where we launched two podcasts. One was a running podcast for people, not at Martin's level, but people who want, do you know what, I joke. I say it's a running podcast for people that hate running. Nice. It's for people that don't like going running on their own. So they've got me in their ear. And as you know, I do like a chat, me in my ear, in their ear. And I take them through effectively an athletic protocol style of run mm-hmm. for 30 minutes or 50 minutes. Martin and I will recognize it pretty much as HIIT training, but we dress it up with a little bit of chit chat. It's me talking for 30 minutes or 50 minutes. My other half gets the benefit of me coming home with nothing to say. So everybody's a winner. But the biggest impact that we've had, and which I would suggest for you, we launched a free podcast, you know, again, on all platforms. And we called it the Trainers On Project.
Okay.
So what I did was I looked at Couch to 5K, and I looked at what was great about Couch to 5K, but also where I thought there were shortcomings. Mm-hmm. And the biggest shortcoming for Couch to 5K is effectively Couch to 5K gives you a piece of paper with times and work rate on.
Yep, yep.
And then you go and do that. Now, the biggest thing from most people's toolbox that they're missing is that motivation mm-hmm. to do that once they step out of the front door. Mm-hmm. Not at Martin's level, because Martin loves running and he loves competition and, you know, that buzz of the event. But for most people stepping out the front door, they don't know what they're doing, how to do it. And they haven't got that little angel in their ear mm-hmm. saying, come on, you can do this. Yep, they've got the little devil in the ear saying, stop, 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 go past the donut shop. And ultimately what we're trying to do with the Trainers On Project is bridge the gap that Couch to 5K doesn't offer. I think we've had something like 180,000 downloads in seven months across the whole world. And bearing in mind, we don't advertise or anything. So I do it because I love it. And I love the feedback that we get from mostly from 30 to 55 year old mm-hmm. Men and women. But it starts off, it's an 8-week program. It starts off with week one with a 30-second slow jog. And we explain mm-hmm. what levels you want to run at with a 2-minute walk. So it's more walking than running, but it gets you started. And it proves that running isn't this mythical exercise that's only for elite athletes. Actually, mm-hmm. everybody can do it at their own speed. And we do a proper warm-up, because I'm sure Martin will tell us that, you know, the warm-up is essentially one of the most important parts of any training session. If you get that wrong, you can't perform. And I believe that you, me, all of these other everyday athletes out there, we are athletes, and we, if we follow an athletic protocol, which can sound scary to some people, actually, we're more likely to succeed at something following the psychology of an athletic protocol and the physicality of an athletic protocol. So we've got an 8-week program. We threw it out there. Effectively, we recorded it live, 24 sessions. And the aim is to encourage people to do 3 running sessions at 30 minutes per week. And it starts off in week one, lots of walking, lots of very encouraging, telling people you can do this. You have got the mm-hmm. ability, as simple as that. And it takes people all the way through to week 8, where effectively we get them to interval run, jog run mm-hmm. At a steady pace for 30 minutes. And I think we've had some of all the downloads. We get lots of feedback on Instagram and Facebook through its webpage, etc. And people are actually, it's amazing. People don't celebrate the fact that they're running. They celebrate the fact that they've completed something consistently for 8 weeks. Mm. And that is the big thing I noticed during COVID, particularly.
Coming back again to that key core word, consistency. And I tell you what, again, I'm certainly going to embrace this, because I very much recommend, if only this that you glean from this, and you're one of those people that just feels like even the concept of getting out of bed, and we know what it feels like, is just such a Herculean task. I cannot recommend more heartily just nice and gently, slow and steady, begin with the walk. I tell you, irrespective of the in excess of a stone weight loss that I've benefited from, I cannot communicate enough how much this has done for my overall appreciation of life and those little nuggets that you may or may not access when life can be so very stressful. Now, Martin, I want to bring you back in now because so much has been developed. I know, obviously, as well as being a very high-level GB age athlete, you're also an entrepreneur, a businessman. So, you know, time is, of course, the most crucial commodity. Can you talk to me a little bit more about how you balance that time, fitting in your commitment to your running focus, and also touch upon that stretching aspect, core to any form of exercise, if you could?
I mean, just following on from what Stuart was saying, as a sport, running probably is, without a doubt, hands down, the most accessible activity in sport that you can get involved in. It requires no special equipment. It requires no special pitches, anything like that. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, we're not designed to play football. We learn that it's a skill, or play cricket, or play rugby, but we are mechanically designed through, you know, millennia to run. It was how we first hunted. It's what makes us, and I don't just mean as sprinters, as endurance athletes. We are physically endurance athletes. That's why we're upright. Mm. That's why there's only two legs. That's why when you're running, you're only ever touching the ground very briefly compared to animals with four legs.
I'm so glad you brought that up because it sounds so obvious, but I would not have instantaneously made that link. So I really appreciate there that you've very neatly explained almost the essentiality of running to how we actually have come to be who we are now.
If you look at our you know, just as a mammal, our position, our upright, our two legs and the size of our lungs and our physique is made for running, and it's made for distance running. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of evidence that suggests that early humans, you know, when they were hunting, they didn't chase animals and catch them. Mm. They chased animals working together until the animal collapsed from exhaustion, you know. And regularly there are stories of herdsmen and whatever in East Africa who chase cheetahs, chase leopards, chase lions away from their livestock by taking it in turns to chase them until the animal is exhausted. And that was how we originally started hunting, by actually pursuing our prey over long distances until they were tired. So, you know, we are it's part of our DNA as a mammal to run. And In the modern, so then bringing it millions of years to right now where we are, there's no other sport that is so easily measurable in terms of your gains and your performance with GPS watches, with Strava apps, with all, you know, with real time Facebook apps for running, and with events. And, you know, 20 years ago or 30 years ago, 40 years ago, running events were all very sort of specialized, sort of very a bit anorak, guys with string vests and moustaches, and it was all very mysterious what they were doing. Now, especially with the prevalence of things like parkrun, it has become so accessible to everybody, and you can measure your performance and your improvement and measure it against your own improvement, against other people and your peers, in a non-threatening, non-overtly competitive way. And you can track that. And of course, that then leads into becoming more competitive or just keeping it as a hobby. You know, I'm happy with this. I don't want to be Mo Farah. I'm fine just to plod along and see that I'm not, you know, I'm not deteriorating, I'm not improving, but I'm staying fit, and a park run once a week is good enough for me. But I'm looking forward to a gold medalist at an Olympics who says, I started with park run, you know.
Absolutely.
And it will happen because, you know, participation has exploded in the sport.
And it's beautiful. I was very lucky just this last week to share a podcast with the director of events for the London Marathon, and he was enthusing, and I was just feeling his energy about running, returning, because of course, Stuart, you alluded to, the context of the day remains the pandemic, but mass participation, running, returning to Hatfield, how great is that coming up? I think it's actually on the final day, Sunday, the July 11th, so tell you what, David made a great point. You know, most of us will be maybe thinking about perhaps getting some more extra eateries that evening. Well, go for a little 5K run with your friends. It's very community focused at Hatfield in the morning. There's a mile in the afternoon if you want to be a little bit more serious. And then you're set, you're fit, you've done your exercise, indulge in the evening.
I mean, races are starting to open back up again. I even raced myself for the first time about a month, 6 weeks ago. All of those race organisers now are, you know, being very mindful of new ways of organising their events. Yep. Rather than mass participation, which is very strange. The last race I did a half marathon about 6 weeks ago, and we all started off time trial style. So literally, each individual athlete started individually, which made it very, very difficult to know quite where you were in the race compared to everyone around you. But it was a great way of actually pinning a number on your vest. A lot of people don't want to ever pin a number to their vest, and running, that you don't have to do that. Whereas, you know, if you want to play football, you have to find a team, you have to find a pitch, you have to find, you know, and it's wonderful, but it's less easy to get into than running.
Just on the again, that management of time, that overcoming barriers to access is so vital, such a key win that runners will experience. And I'm looking forward to picking that up myself. But just briefly, can you explain, Martin, a little bit about the importance of dynamic warming up to any successful running program?
I mean, for many, many, many years, people thought before running, they had to stand there and stretching their quads and doing all these static stretches, which I'm sure Stuart will completely concur as a qualified physiologist as he is in sports science. Static stretching while your muscles are cold is actually very dangerous and is a surefire way of leading to an injury. Dynamic stretching is essentially a warm-up. So it's doing little high kicks, doing little jogging on the spot, even going for a real gentle run or just a walk, just moving your legs, just doing high kicks, do a few star jumps. Something that moves not only gets the muscles warm, but actually gets the cardiovascular system warmed up, starts getting some of those smaller muscles fired up, starts engaging your glutes and different muscles in your legs and your lower back. And so dynamic stretching is incredibly important before a run, especially as you get older. I mean, if you're 19 years old, you can probably get straight out of bed and straight and run at 6 minute miles and not wonder anything about it. Once you're 50 or, you know, in your 40s, if you don't do a decent 5 minutes at least of stretching, dynamic stretching before a run, then it's going to hurt you a lot and you're going to have a lot more difficulty recovering.
And do you know what I think is vital about that? Because again, Stuart, you made some really good points about maybe those hideous experiences many men have had from their PE days back in the day. And I suppose, again, if we're talking about running being so all-embracing, so inclusive of all, if you do fail to do those details right at the beginning, if you don't do the right warm-up, then you maybe get a stitch or you pull a muscle and then you have that feeling, that mental sensation that, again, this is not quite for me. So
could I just say,
Martin, please.
I'll just say quickly, I mean, I've led a lot of people running and I've you know, coached a lot of people running over the years. And one of the classic things I get from people why they gave up running and stopped running is going, oh, my knees hurt. And it's not their knees that hurt. That might be where they feel the pain. There's nothing wrong with the knees. I gave up running because there's a problem with my knees. Well, what was wrong with your knees? Well, they hurt. Okay, that's where you felt the pain. The problem was actually with tight muscles that attached to your knee. And those muscles are tight and they're sore because you're doing an exercise that you're not used to, that you haven't done before. If I went to the gym and tried to bench press 40 kilos straight away, the next day, my chest muscles and my arm muscles, my shoulders would be sore. And they wouldn't be sore because there was something wrong with them. They're sore because I tried to bench press 40 kilos and I'm not used to it. Just the same way as running. Of course, it's going to feel sore. you want to limit how sore it is by warming up properly, warming down properly, and starting slowly. Don't think, right, I'm going to be a runner and I'm going to run a 2 hour, 5 minute marathon and wonder why you can't walk for months. You know, you have to take things gradually. But I'm not saying that there aren't people that have potentially genetic reasons why their knees are not suited for running. But a lot of the people that say they stop because their knees hurt is because their quads are tight, you know, and they need to, you know, have a massage, make sure that they stretch properly after the run.
So once again, you do the preparation and you commit to that consistent effort. I guarantee you're going to benefit from this. One of the key things that we've focused in on, it's kind of run through this, sorry for the pun, but bringing Stuart back into this. Just give me a little bit of an insight here of that community spirit when you're doing this as part of a pack, so to speak, and just how critical that is for the individual's mental well-being.
I mean, just before I start on that, I'll just very quickly touch on something you mentioned earlier. I mean, first of all, Martin's talking my language now, because in a previous life, before I looked after BMF, effectively what I did was work with high-level athletes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it sounds a bit cruel, really, but we're looking at mechanical deficiencies and why, you know, and what Martin explains there is actually one of the most common things that I see with the general runner. The problem I have, or the issue I have, in terms of flexing my academic brain, is that I actually don't get a chance to talk to people about that, because it's actually, for most people, it's a psychological issue, and trying to adjust perhaps other issues in their life to have more time to do exercise, to feel more confident. And, you know, when somebody like Martin starts talking about tendonitis and friction through the knee, my eyes light up, because that is a world of conversation that I like having around building a stronger, what I call a stronger grid, which is working through the pelvis to improve glute strength. And we can get all technical about it, but that's maybe a completely different podcast on another day.
Listen, I tell you what, watch this space. This has got to happen. I know nothing here, but I'm so fascinated. I'm awash with questions. But
having said that, though, it doesn't, from my angle, for general participation, like Martin mentioned, park run, you know, and park run to a degree, if you look from the outside in, you say they're a rival organization, but I personally think there's room for everybody in the industry, whatever you do in the leisure industry. And one of the other important things I think about a warm-up for people, particularly if you've got a coaching opportunity, is mindset evaluation. And you know, I personally, whenever I warm up with my members, I take them on the same warm-up journey, whatever they're doing, because actually, although the session might look different every time, or the run might look different, or you might go on a different route or a different hill or a different speed, actually, I like the formality of a warm-up, because Martin will concur, I hope, but a warm-up is about that, not just warming up the muscle group, but also for the average person. Martin may agree, I can't tell you how many people I've spoken to that you'd ask or say, what do you do for physical activity or exercise? I don't really say anything. I tried running once, but I'm not a runner. And I always giggle on the inside. But actually, what's happened is they've gone out, they've opened the latch on the front door, unlocked the fence, give it one of the old arm stretches. We're all on camera, so we can get a bit. Done the old classic arm stretch. And then bang, they're straight into a 70 to 80% sort of aerobic threshold style run. And within 2 or 3 minutes, oxygen levels have depleted. Mild panic attack kicks in, because they're not actually fit enough to run at that level. So, you know, the biggest and best piece of advice I would say to people, like you've encountered, is actually starting with that walk and building a walking speed. And you don't need a fancy watch to measure it. You just need to think about what speed you're moving at. And the warm up, it's not just it is the most important thing, is that you warm your body up so that you don't end up with injuries later on. But I also like the process of going on the same mindset challenge. It's the same with a warm down in general population.
And a warm-up is mental preparation as well as physical preparation, you know, and that's very important. Yeah, the amount of marathons I've been to, and people are like, why are you guys all running up and down the street? You're about to do 26.2 miles. I'm like, I'm warming up my muscles because I want to be at my race pace from the moment the gun goes, not warming up into it during the race, you know. And another question is of course, the warm down as well, or recovery after a race. And, you know, every time I normally race on a Sunday, but I race, you know, all during the week. But normally a big target race like London Marathon or Berlin Marathon or whatever is on a Sunday. And I'll often finish the race and then I go for a run, and people are like, but I go for a run at literally, it's like 30% effort, but it's still a run. It might be 5K, it might even be 10K run to get the lactate out of my muscles. And it's very important to do that.
It was amazing there to hear you develop a conversation from not just the focus, the need to get that warm up correct, but the warm down. Because of course, I guess if it's just, again, you're that very low level, somebody like myself, where you are operating near the elite level, I suppose it is once you put yourself through a run, be that a sprint event or an endurance marathon type style, I guess once the muscles have done that level of activity, and if you don't warm down correctly, almost like a car, you're at a danger of a piston snapping, I suppose. Can you just
You're right, Tony, but one of the mistakes I think is often made with running is trying to apply too much science to it. Yeah, it is important to have a warm up. Yeah, it's important to have a warm down, but it's more important to actually go out for the run in the bit in the middle anyway. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Even if you get it wrong, you're not going to get it wrong, you know, like if you're throwing a javelin and you're going to put it through your foot. You know, it's kind of like, yes, once you start taking it a bit more seriously, when you want to improve, when you want to make your form better, and you want to get quicker, you want to run further, then yes, you need to start applying a bit of science to it. But there are magazines and books available about running, and it's a bit unnecessary, a lot of it. I mean, it is if you want to compete at a very high level, an elite level, then it's all about marginal gains. It's all about carbon plated shoes, or it's about these sessions and that sessions and these intervals. And, you know, it's all about running anaerobically and aerobically. Mm. And it's all about VO2 max, and all these sciences. But if you want to get fit, you want to lose weight, you want to help your mental health and your mental well-being, that it's important to just get out running. And I learned a bit too late. I wish I'd learned it earlier, that there's no quick shortcut to becoming a really good runner, apart from running more. The moment I increased volume, even if it was rubbish, every time I added another 10% to my weekly mileage, I saw an improvement in my marathon times.
And again, so I reckon that must come down to that key word that Stuart brought to the table today, which is consistency. And that second one, which is commitment. I think irrespective of whatever level you operate in, whatever mode you apply it to, if you get those two C's working with you and on your behalf, you're going to find you're just naturally gaining. I don't know why it's that simple, but it seems to be.
And it's more difficult for some people than others. I was naturally driven by being very competitive. I didn't take up running because I wanted to improve my mental health necessarily or become fitter. I just did it because I wanted to be in a competitive environment and beat other people at it, because that's what was giving me a buzz. The other benefits, or the friendships I've made, or the whole community has all come secondary to that. Although, one of the main reasons I joined St Albans Striders, for instance, was I was new to St Albans. I didn't live here. I'd moved to the city. I didn't know anyone. I didn't want to join a football team or anything. I didn't want that level of commitment. I wanted to be able to do it in my own time, in my own terms. So I joined a running club. And that was an absolute revelation in terms of support, community. And I ran for years and years in their slow groups, much to the annoyance of those groups, as I was clearly too quick for them, because I stayed in those groups because that's where my friends down the pub were. And eventually they kicked me out and said, you know, and I improved and I got better and better. And one thing led on to another. I didn't have this desire to become a very, very good runner, but it just happened. You know, and I guess Stuart is probably better placed because he coaches people for a living. That's what Stuart does. And so he is exposed much more to people's different motivations for why they're doing it than I am. I can only speak from my own experience.
Absolutely.
And I was just driven by wanting to compete. And, you know, and I love it. I love that feeling of tracking someone and overtaking them, you know, with 50 meters to go.
What I love about that too is because that animal still lives in me, and I think on some kind of a level that connects to those points you were making about our evolutionary element. But let's not lose track of the fact that the beauty of running is that you may well channel that animal and then want to study to become as high a level caliber as you might, maybe on the par with GB age level athlete Martin.
I mean, just
go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. One other thing I would just say, though, is running not only gave me access to a great running community here and a very flexible way of exercising. I have a business that requires me to travel around the world to all sorts of places, and I tie my training in with that. But it also gives me an opportunity to fly into Baku or fly into Tripoli or fly into Lagos or fly into Luanda or Nairobi or wherever, and I go running. And I seek out the local running groups or athletes there. And I've run with gold medalists in Iceland. I've run with the Trinidadian national marathon champion. And I put it out there that I'm looking for runners at this kind of level to run with. Yep. And suddenly I'm involved with all this and I'm sightseeing in a way that is so much more satisfying than sitting on a coach taking a picture out of a window.
Rubbing shoulders as you have done with the Brownlee twins. But coming back to Stuart then, one of the things that I adore about the what I do, because I've got to talk to people at immensely high elite level, athletic level, gold medalists, Rugby World Cup winners, the list goes on and on. But I also value massively the interrelationship between grassroots and the elite. Quite simply, any Olympic athletes, and we're all going to be watching those superstars in the Olympics real soon, once upon a time was just a little person, boy, girl, just looking there with eyes wide, thinking, oh my goodness, that's what I want to do. And then they live it and they became it. I love that. But still coming back though to the inclusivity of running, and that diverse array of people that you work with to become their best, at whatever that is for each individual. Just kind of begin the wrap-up process, Stuart, with those critical points, almost reminding, refreshing us about how vital running can be and how open it is.
I think the first thing to realise is that, you know, if you look at Martin's, you know, really brilliantly spoke about sort of that level of performance side of things, and as well as being a part of the Striders group. But 99.9% of people out there that listen to this podcast will probably associate more likely with, I go for a run once a week, or I want to go for a run once a week. And, you know, we spoke about this before. I'm really lucky. Not quite at the level Tony's competed, but I swam for England. My background was swimming, and therefore I'm not a natural runner. But I have a real passion for coaching people and taking them on a journey. And, you know, selfishly, I guess that's, most coaches will agree with this if they're honest. I want to put my head on a pillow at the end of the night, knowing that I've made a difference to somebody's journey. So the first thing I'd ask somebody to consider on their walking, jogging, running journey, and I always mention those three now, is what is your motivation? And it can be something that comes to you as an epiphany moment, you know, like you see in a movie, or it might be something you need to think about for a couple of days or weeks. Why am I doing it? And a lot of the time, the reason it takes longer for people to come to that conclusion of what it is that's motivating them, they're not honest with themselves. You know?
Still, I love that. And again, this honesty is tantamount to everything, because again, that gets you to, without that, you cannot get those other two C's of the commitment and the consistency. It doesn't happen devoid of honesty. With that, I'm fascinated. I've asked you this before, but I really find this compelling. How important is it? Is it unique to each individual? That why, that motivation, whatever it's going to be unique to you all, is very, very, very defined. Or is it better to keep it nice and broad initially? As I say, I'm fascinated between that kind of dynamic too.
Yeah, I think, it depends what kind of relationship you're talking about, what kind of relationship you have with your activity, or what kind of relationship you have with the desire to achieve your goal. The majority of people that I talk to on a daily basis, if you ask them, what is your goal in terms of engagement with activity, you get two standard responses. I am going somewhere with this, I promise. Two standard responses, and that's, I want to lose fat and I want to tone up. And actually, once, as a coach, it takes a couple of weeks often to unravel why people really want to do something. And what it comes down to fundamentally is that people want to feel better about themselves. They want to feel great. We're swamped with media of the perfect body image, but none of that rubbish matters. What matters really, it's easy to, that's a throwaway comment, but I do mean it. What really matters is, that you get back after some activity, a run, spending time with your kids, going on an adventure that you never thought you'd go on. And you kind of proverbially, not physically, but you proverbially look yourself in the mirror and you say, have I achieved something that sets me apart from the person that I was? Yep. That is the key. And that's where running is brilliant, because the great thing about the why, Tony, is whether you're a performance level athlete like Martin, or you're, you know, Jenny and Gary that have got off the sofa for the first time and gone for a 10-minute run.
Hey, listen, Tony Rice, let's call it 8 weeks ago, man.
Let's call it Tony. Okay, let's call it Tony then. The why is what gets you through that really tough bit at the end. That dip for the finish line, you know, or that last 10 metres to get back to the gate. The why, being honest with yourself about the why, we're getting a bit psychological here, but it is the key. That why is what makes you take those extra steps. And we've got a saying with the CrossRun podcast where we'll say to people, we don't take one extra step because that's average. We take five extra steps because that is the difference between good and great. And it's about implanting that psychology into everyday life and saying, don't go, you know, first of all, if you're going one step more than you were yesterday, that is great. But actually, can you go five steps more and be that next level? But to do that, you've really got to dig deep and say, why am I doing this? And I will constantly say to people, ask yourself at this point of a training session, whether it's running, fitness, whatever it is, or life coaching, etc., why are you here in this last 10 minutes or 10% of this activity or this process? Why are you here? And you can't truly perform, I think, unless you're super gifted and talented. You know, even Usain Bolt had to work his backside off to be a world champion. It didn't, despite what people think, he was better than most. It didn't come easy to him. He still put all of the work in. You just see the glitz and the glamour and the finger pointing up to the sky at the end of it on TV. But the process that preset that was all based around similar to,
I mean, like, it's Martin fascinating said, about Usain Bolt. Here's a fact about Usain Bolt. Of the 50 100 meter fastest times all time, 35 have subsequently been proven to be with an athlete who's under the influence of doping / anabolic steroid development, blah blah blah. The remaining 15 all go to Usain Bolt. So again, the only clean 100 meter record holder, you could say. But little known thing about Usain Bolt, and Martin, I'd be interested to get your insights here. He started, I believe, as a 400 meter man before converting into this uber sprinter that we all associate. Is that a rare thing? I mean, just talk to me a little bit, conscious of time, about that kind of dynamic, yeah, I suppose.
I think so. But then, I mean, this always goes back to, I remember after 2012, there was always this desire to race Rhodesia, the 800 meter world record holder, with Usain Bolt at 600 meters. And
I'm sure the advertisers would have been getting lots of things together to make that so.
That would have been amazing. Personally, Usain Bolt, I think, still would have won it, because he would have been so far ahead after 400 that he could probably have stayed out front for the last 200. What do I think about the fact that it came from I don't know. You're getting much more athletes swapping sports than you ever did. You've got some Beth Potter, who was a 10,000 meter medalist at the last Olympics, getting into triathlon and doing very well. You've got Sven Jorgensen, a famous American triathlete, who's going from triathlon and now onto the track and swapping around. You know, because I think that there's a lot of endurance sport that is, it's all about mentality. There's, I think one of the current, Pogacar in the Tour de France, I may be wrong, came from a mountain biking and then he suddenly decided very recently that he would get into road cycling and has been on the podium at the Tour de France. And so you're getting quite a lot of transferability between sports. It doesn't always work. I mean, Bradley Wiggins decided he was going to become a rower and that didn't really work out for him. And you know, I mean, even in his day, Lance Armstrong, before he was a pariah, was a very, very talented triathlete before he became very talented. And he's a very good runner and has done some exceptionally fast running times. So Usain Bolt being a 400 meter runner, then becoming 100 meters, it's still sprinting. You know, it's still very much in that anaerobic power sport. Usain Bolt running a marathon, you know, it would be a slow marathon. That he's a big unit. But do you remember? Do you remember his footsteps that they had at St Pancras Station in 2012? Do you remember they marked out his footsteps for the 100 meters?
No, Phil.
And they put them in little. Do you remember that, Stuart?
Yeah.
They're amazing. The I had to leap from one to the other. I mean, he's doing like one stride for my two. It's incredible.
As a person of restricted growth at 5'1", a pug to be precise, I can only imagine how many giant leaps I would have to be taking.
Actually, you have hit on something else that makes running very inclusive. Is it, apart from obviously weight, but size and shape wise, there's all sorts of unusual shapes and styles of very successful runners. So Haile Gebrselassie, probably one of the greatest ever distance runners, was 5'1". Mm. But then there are other athletes who are sort of 6 foot. Yep. And so there's no particular, you look at Paula Radcliffe's running style with her nodding
absolutely.
Head.
It's almost suggestive, although slightly more elegant. I don't know if you remember that Friends episode where Phoebe decided to be a runner. I don't necessarily think I'll ever have that comparison to Paula's face, mind you, but it's certainly not necessarily the gait that we ordinarily associate with the physiology of elite runners. Nevertheless, we've touched on so many fascinating topics and it's been a thrill and an honour. I feel as though we've just hit the tip of the iceberg. I'm sure we'll be back for more. Martin, in closing, please, if people have enjoyed this, I know they will have, and want to become part of the spirit of running and maybe find that at the Striders, how can they do just that? What's the best website for the Striders?
It's St Albans Striders, all one word, .com, and they will get all the information about where they meet. As Stuart will probably attest to, it's those first steps that are most people's barriers to it. They're worried about their own ability, they're worried about what the other people will think, they're worried about what they'll look like. Mm-hmm. Don't, you know, it's nobody's judging you, and if a mile as an elite athlete is the same distance as a mile at walking. You've got to go the same distance. You know, everyone has their own goals. You know, and get involved. It's an easy sport to get involved with.
You guys have inspired me. I'm definitely going to upgrade my running, which is now becoming a core part of my life, and get some running into that. Stuart, can you remind me, please, of that international received world-class podcast, which I need to get into my life very soon? What's the pod, please, buddy?
So what I'm going to suggest is, if you're at the beginning of your journey or you don't know where to start, but you do know how to use a podcast, our podcast is called The Trainers On Podcast. It's an 8-week beginners running program, similar to Couch to 5K, but with coaching. And that's on Apple, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. You download it for free. There's no marketing, no interruptions, no sales, no ads. It is just a podcast to help people, hopefully, on the start of their running journey. At the end of that 8 weeks, you contact Martin and you get involved with the Striders.
Hey, sounds like a winning combination. I'm certainly getting that into my life. And also, Stuart, I know very well that forms part, not one you're pitching, it's just something you've done for pleasure. It's had its natural momentum, which is wonderful.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, just the feedback's great, yeah.
But nevertheless, the key thing where you do apply and live your values and what you know, gaining people, changing their lives, I do think it's fair to say, to some degree. And that's all done at Be Military Fit. Again, here in St. Albans, but readily available. What's the Be Military Fit website? Remind me and those listening.
So it's bemilitaryfit.com. Don't be put off by the term military. Military is really an ethos. From the outside in, we might look like a bunch of mad people running around a field, but there is very sensible scientific programming based around what we do. And the military aspect is an ethos. It's teamwork. It's competitiveness within yourself, intrinsic values, and respecting the park, to being on my biggest bugbear, being on bleeding time, you know, do the best you can to get there. Mm-hmm. It's not a boot on your back and, you know, no eyeballing. Yeah. It's just about values and core values. Ultimately, it is exercise outdoors, and that's the key, really. Get outdoors, enjoy it. Enjoy being out. Verulam Park, you know, Martin will contest. Beautiful park, wonderful gem in a wonderful city. And, you know, there's nothing quite like exercising on a Thursday afternoon, hearing the bells go off from the cathedral. And it's quite a unique experience. Tony, you know, Martin's down there with the Striders running on a Tuesday, Thursday evening. We're out there in the park and everybody's out there. One big community trying to be better, do better and feel better.
Tell you what, guys, I really appreciate your time. I want to say again, myself personally, Stuart, really appreciate the gauntlet laid down a little while back now. It's enhanced and enriched my life massively. I could only envisage that continuing. I'm certainly going to get into the Trainers On podcast to take that up another level. But for tonight, thank you ever so much indeed, both of you, for your time, your insights, and your wonderful, just generally good-eggedness, chaps. So thank you.
Thank you ever so much. Take care. Bye-bye.